Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Arthur Staple. You're listening to No Sleep Till Belmont, your Islanders podcast from The Athletic. Today, taking a little bit of a turn from our usual conversation, bringing back an old friend of the show, an old friend of mine from many years talking in locker rooms, and someone who's a definite fan favorite if you're an Islanders fan from the 2010s. It's Colin McDonald. How you doing, Colin?
Doing well. Always good to speak to you. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you, and for those that don't know, within the last month or two, Colin announced his retirement after about a 13-year professional career, 12-year professional career, which included a couple of very important stops with the Islanders. First, right around the 2012-13 shortened season when he became an NHL mainstay, and then finished his pro career with Bridgeport last season, where he was the veteran voice in the room with a lot of young guys. So a lot of good Islander stuff to talk about. But first, how is retirement sitting with you, and what are you doing with yourself to keep busy?
Yeah, so it's been a change, like we just touched on off air, but it's very exciting. We're very happy. Obviously, COVID maybe forced the issue a little bit, but that said, it's not like I was just getting my career going. I was definitely towards the end. So let's say the last 6 months when I decided I wanted to kind of challenge myself and get outside hockey, just started networking and talking to people, learning what else is out there. And I'm very thankful through hockey people, not that I know personally. I was connected with them, and I joined a company called Recorded Future. It's a security intelligence company, cybersecurity to be more specific. And again, I'm just kind of getting my feet wet right now. A lot to learn, but I really enjoy the product. And at the end of the day, we're trying to help people, which was important to me. Now that I decided to get out of hockey.
Yeah. Playing last season, and then having it kind of cut short because of the pandemic, I imagine, like you said, if you were just starting out, things would be a little different, but I imagine there's some peace that comes with this just because of the situation this year, especially in the AHL, where it's such a short season and it's kind of haphazard. So did that kind of help ease your mind on the transition?
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I took the first couple months to figure out what I wanted to do. And, once the league, the American League specifically, kind of, a couple teams dropped out, and they talk about the shortened schedule, of course, and, all like the COVID protocols, nothing against that, but it just kind of, talking about Bridgeport specifically, playing against two other teams. I think Bridgeport, they have the lowest number of games, though I'm playing within the American League. I was just like, maybe this is time to just call it. And, to be honest with you, I've handled this a lot better than I thought I would, because as you know, we invest so much into trying to not only make it to NHL, but to stay. For whatever reason, I just found peace. And granted too, I got to 908 games played, right? So to your point, it's not like I was just trying to make a name for myself. So I was very happy with the career that I had, the people that I met, all those kind of cliches that you hear from people in my position. And I was very thankful. Thankful I have some stability now for my family, which, you know, you just don't get in professional sports. And just excited for this kind of next chapter that I just started.
Well, let's look back a little bit. You know, the Islanders figure so prominently in your pro career. When you look back at some of your fondest memories, do they come from that kind of breakthrough season for you in 2012-13?
Yeah, no doubt. And I know you and I have talked a lot about this, but I guess just for the people that are not familiar, I can give you the Cliff Notes version. I was 28 at the time, just really scraping, clawing, trying to get my break, if you will. I led the league in goals a couple years prior, and that didn't do it. So, I give a lot of credit to Brent Thompson, Eric Boganicki when I signed in Bridgeport that lockout year. They're like, Mac, you're not going to make this team as a goal scorer. You got to be a gritty kind of bottom six, role player. And at that point, nothing else seemed to work. So I really bought into that. And I think the best thing that happened to me was that lockout year. I had whatever ended up being, say, I had a 30-game tryout down in Bridgeport to give Snowy a real good look as to who I was. It's very tough in training camp to get that fair shake, to get that fair look. You really got to do your best to stand out, of course. And for whatever reason, I wasn't able to do that. So to get kind of that 30-game tryout where they can get to know me both on the ice and off the ice, I think really helped give me a chance. And obviously I was desperate to try and make a name for myself being, I wasn't even qualified as a rookie, I don't think, because of my age that year. So I was just desperate to stick, and not just for myself, but a lot of things seemed to click for us that year. Obviously playing with Casey and Marty, very similar, easy players to play with, as you know. So that helped. And the team was able to find some traction in that shortened season. And then you get the kind of the interest of the fans back and getting them in a Coliseum and just kind of feeding off that heading towards the end of the year, then in the playoffs, of course. So I know I'm going on here, but definitely, the most memorable part of my career was my time with the Islanders.
That was kind of it has some parallels, I imagine, not with the kind of team that the Islanders have now versus the kind of team they had then, but just with the shortened season. When you watch the guys kind of go through it now, and obviously, you qualify anything by saying they're going through it in the COVID world. So the travel and everything is so much different. But when you have that condensed 3 or 4 month season where you got to pack in a bunch of games and every game seems to mean a little bit more than it might in a longer season, how do you kind of, because that season too, you guys got off to a slow start and really just kind of came on big at the end. How do you kind of keep it together when through the ebbs and flows and the ups and downs?
Yeah, I think, again, to your point, we started off slow, right? But you don't have 82 games to kind of figure it out. So you really have to buy in sooner than later and figure that out. And once we did figure it out, I thought we were able to carry that through the end of the year. Again, you don't have to worry about carrying that momentum for, call it 40, 50 games. You just have to, we kept saying it's a sprint to the finish. It's a sprint to the finish. And we were able to kind of figure it out at the right time. And again, just carried that through the end of the season. At that point too, I don't know specifically, but the team was struggling the years prior. And I think we all, that year, we realized we were in the mix for, call it, the duration of a full season. And I think that got us excited to get that experience that a lot of us did not have at that point. And I guess the stars aligned, so to speak, and we were able to get in.
There's only a few guys left from that team that are still around the Islanders, which I guess if it's almost been a decade, that's actually not too bad. And one of those guys who's kind of been in the spotlight a little bit the last couple of weeks is Thomas Hickey, who came in that year. You've known him for a long time, and when you see what he's gone through and to be able to get back on the ice after a couple of years away, did you take note of that? And what are you, from your time knowing Thomas, how much I assume it meant to him?
Yeah. And again, not to make this about me, but he did call me about 2 weeks ago just to kind of congratulate me about my career. But what I'm getting at is we had the opportunity. We had a pretty good talk, and it's just such a emotional situation. You know, I was there obviously last year with him down in Bridgeport, kind of going through it. And, you know, he just, it's hard to put into words, having someone go through that. You know, I have a brother and a sister, and, you know, I get emotional just thinking about that. And here he is trying to, again, kind of reestablish himself in the NHL. And, so to see when he finally got in and to play well, and to listen to his interviews and just to see the emotion, that he's still carrying, it's just such a special moment. And I know people say in these situations, but it really just kind of hammers home the point of, you know, sports is so, insignificant in certain situations like that. And, you know, the glass half full kind of mentality is, you know, he has hockey to kind of, as his outlet, right? To be around the guys, to be around the game. And again, I know you just said it, but he's such a class act. You know, we came to the Islanders together. I think we picked him up off waivers from LA, if my memory serves me correct, right, that year. So kind of get in at the right time, or I shouldn't say right time, but the same time. But then we were both finally able to make it, as we both struggled, you know, getting that opportunity. And, you know, he's gone on to have a heck of a career. But yeah, you're just, you know, your emotions just kind of, your heart just feels for him having to go through something like that.
Now, you mentioned you were, like we said, back in Bridgeport last year, and different environment, different management, same Brent Thompson still there coaching. But some of the younger guys that you were with down there who have kind of graduated up, whether it's playing some taxi squad like Otto Koivula, or a guy that you got to know very well last season, Oliver Wahlstrom, who's really having, you know, if there weren't a couple of other rookies lighting it up around the league, he'd be a guy that would be maybe getting talked about a little bit more for a Calder Trophy. You know, what did you see from Wahlstrom last year, and are you at all surprised by the way he's been able to put it together so far with the Islanders?
No, I think you're never surprised. I mean, let's be honest, like, first rounders are going to get that opportunity, right? And I think you have to remember too how young these kids are. I think people, fans, sometimes even media, just forget how young they are. And I see that side of it just from like an off the ice perspective, right? And but on the ice, you see the talent level, right? Like, there's no question. You know, I see that, and I see it in practice, right? So the fan or whoever might not see it as much in games, because it's hard. It's a tough sport. It's hard to figure out the game at that level. And there was definitely times that he, I don't want to say struggled, he was trying to figure out the pro game. I think he had, again, was it the 1 year of college and he made the jump? And, you know, for some people, it takes time. It takes time to figure it out. There's only so many superstars in the world that can come in at 18, and it's a seamless transition. So by no means am I surprised to see the success he's had. I am very happy he was, I won't say given this opportunity, but he has this opportunity in front of him, and he's obviously running away with that. You know, there's a lot of people that get that opportunity, don't do much with it, and then, you know, they're crawling their way back. You know, it could be for a season, it could be for many seasons after that. But he definitely has those intangibles, that those buzzwords that people always love to talk about. But again, potential is such a finicky, scary word, right? Like, potential is great, but it means nothing at the end of the day. So he's around the right people in that dressing room. I don't know the coaching staff that well, but obviously they know how to have success. And again, I guess the stars are aligning for him as far as just being in the right environment, the learning environment, having the right guys to kind of hold him accountable, playing with the right people. And then his natural ability is able to take over.
And the cameras, MSG cameras, have kind of caught him a couple times singing along with whatever song's been playing in the arena. And I've certainly heard whispers about, not whispers, but just comments about he is his own young man. Even though he's a young guy, he's got a very loose, free personality. You must have seen that up close too.
Yeah, and it's, I think Trotz had a comment when he was asked about that, and he spun him and said something along the lines of, I thought it was great. It shows the moment's not too big for him. And, talking about myself at 28, and the moment was too big for me at times, or at least maybe I didn't show that, but I definitely felt that, right? Like a holy cow moment. And for him to be kind of that loose on the bench, like, I wish I had that. I can guarantee you go around the room and there's, 90% of those players would say, I wish I had that kind of loose kind of a feeling during these games, coaches, they always say, like, you play your best when you're not thinking, you're just playing loose, you're having fun, right? And he's obviously able to carry that same approach to the NHL level, which is very hard to do. You make one mistake and you might not see the ice the rest of the game. You're worried about if you're getting back in the lineup, all those kind of results that might happen in certain situations that you're very well aware of. And the fact that he can handle it the way he is, I think speaks volumes to maturity at such a young age, not getting outplayed by that moment.
And you, as we said, when you came up, Garth Snow was the GM, Jack Capuano was the coach. There was definitely a particular feel around the Islanders organization. It had a real kind of small family feel, an us against the world sort of feeling. And now you finish your career playing in an organization for Lou Lamoriello, who runs as tight a ship as anybody out there. What was it like to be in the organization with Lou and kind of come back to it after a couple of years away? It must have been a strange feeling, considering, like I said, that the 3 years you spent under Garth in a very different environment.
Yeah, I mean, by no means was Snowy a country club environment, so I'm hesitant to make that reach. But yeah, I mean, Lou has his ways of doing things. It's very well known. I can't speak too much to it, to be honest. To be honest, obviously, because I, wasn't up with him. But some of that definitely trickles down to Bridgeport. And again, that's more my personality, that kind of type A structured environment. So I have no problem with that. Again, from a selfish point of view, it was nice for me, with my Providence College background, I was finally able to cross paths with both Lou and Chris. You hear so much about them during school, and it took me a long time to finally get that opportunity, but it was just very nice to get that experience with them. And it's hard to question what he does with the results that he gets, right? I think at the end of the day, it's just holding people accountable, and you can make the argument that that doesn't happen a lot these days, right? Not just in hockey, but in society in general, and it's probably for a different conversation, but I don't mind that accountability that he sets from day one, and everyone's held to the same standard, a guy like, Matt Barzal to a guy that's, not in the lineup that much. Everyone is held equally, and I have no problem with that.
Well, we're really appreciative, Colin, that you came on here and, put a nice bow on a very impressive NHL career that blossomed with the Islanders. Like I said, I think there's a lot of fans out there that have incredible fond memories of not only that season, that first successful season in a long time, but your role in it. So from them, I say thank you. And from me, I say thank you. It's always great to talk to you. And Colin McDonald, everyone, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Arthur. Again, thanks for having me on.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right. Well, that was a great interview with Colin McDonald. And now we're back to our regularly scheduled co-host, AJ Maletzko, has hopped on. How you doing, AJ?
I'm good, Arthur. How you doing?
Doing great. Better than the Islanders are doing. So they managed to squeeze out, a couple of wins this past week. But their last two games in Pittsburgh were kind of varying degrees of which is the best way I could put it. They really didn't look like themselves. And maybe it's Pittsburgh who's beaten them 6 out of 8 times now. But I think we're starting to see a little bit of a thread emerge now in the 9 games they've played without Anders Lee. And I think, to my mind, the thread is there's something missing. And, maybe that's a stupid way to put it or a simple way to put it. But it's more than just Anders Lee on the ice. They seem to not, this is 3 games in a row now, these last 2 in Pittsburgh and the 1 in Boston. They did not have good first periods. The first game in Pittsburgh, they compounded it by a terrible second period. But it just feels like there's somebody like an Anders Lee that's usually there to kind of pull everyone together and reinforce the coach's message is just missing, and you can see the results of it.
Yeah, and I think that so much of it to me is what we see on the ice as fans in the media, and then what we know goes on behind the scenes, but we don't see, right? So as a captain, as a leader on this team, as somebody that is so universally respected, you're absolutely right to try to take that message, take Barry Trotz's message and try to reiterate it to his teammates. And then also, just the way that he plays, he sets an example in that grittiness, the strength. I mean, you and I have talked on this podcast, even this season, how he's elevated his game and how he did that by improving his skating during the COVID quarantine. Like, he really took advantage of that time away from the rink in the longer off season and became, he got better stamina and can skate better. So when he's playing alongside a Matt Barzell, he can stay out as long as the guy with the iron lung, because we all know number 13 would stay out there for all 60 minutes if he could. I think with him gone, the team did rally a little bit, right? I mean, now given they played the Devils and then they pulled out 2 out of 3 wins against Philly, but based on what we've seen from Philly, that's maybe not saying as much as it seemed to at the time. Yeah. I think for them, it was great to see Matt Martin get that, second career power play goal and that physical presence that Anders Lee has in front of the net. But I agree with you, not only just the top line, but that power play presence. And again, what goes behind the scenes as captain in the locker room and all these things in this weird COVID year, I think that leadership is even more critical. So, that's something that they're going to have to figure out, whether Anders is around a little bit more, whether, Barry Trotz continues to shake up the lines, but, watching last night's game, the first period was just pulling my hair out. I mean, they took 5 shots on goal and none of them looked all that threatening, right? And they did pick it up in the second period, which was heartening to see, and tried to take advantage of a cold goaltender. But overall, something's got to change as they come down the stretch here.
Yeah, when we talk about the on-ice, off-ice situation, and I get this question a lot. I didn't even have to put on any questions on Twitter. I've heard it unsolicited many times over in the last couple of weeks. Why is Leo Komarov playing on Matthew Barzal's wing? Well, I think if we're, explanations are not excuses, but we try to give some explanations. I think when you say off the ice and leadership and things like that, Leo Komarov and Matthew Barzal have had a pretty close relationship over the years. I think I wrote a story in Barry Trotz's first year about how he'd put Leo Komarov's locker next to Barzal's on the road that year. And it reflected back to a time when Barry was in Washington and he did the same thing with Brooks Orpik. He had Brooks Orpik kind of sitting with the Russian mafia there with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov to kind of help include them a little bit more in the team and make the locker room a bit more of not a North American guys and Russian guys kind of place. And it helped a little bit. And Brooks Orpik is that kind of guy. And Leo is considered to be that kind of guy with the Islanders. And I think he sort of felt like Leo could loosen Barzal up a little bit, or maybe make him pay attention a little bit more, understand the harder parts of the game. And I think that's an interesting move off the ice, but to translate it on the ice, especially now, and Leo is Leo, he does what he does. he doesn't really do what Matthew Barzal does on the ice. And it's a bit frustrating for the fans. It's more than a bit. They're certainly frustrated and they express it a lot. And I think watching it with a more unbiased eye like we do, I am still a little bit baffled that it's gone on this long. I understand that not only are they down Anders Lee, they're now down Michael Dal Col, who's a guy who doesn't produce a lot, but at least kind of gives you some consistency. So they're really searching for answers. But I think Matthew Barzal is too important to this team, especially in this stretch run, to kind of let him drift a little bit on the ice.
And I agree with you on that, in that there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that we are not privy to, and certainly the fans are not privy to, and less so for us this season, because all of our interaction with the players and the coaches are all on Zoom, and it's all manufactured or controlled rather than organic, with us being able to be in the room. So there's even less of a feel of what's going on. And you and I can usually head in there and get a sense of, just different things that are going on that we're not able to do this season. When I look at Leo, I do understand Barry's loyalty, and I understand what he offers to the team. And as you mentioned, behind the scenes, the leadership, the mentorship, all of that, Uncle Leo, right? I mean, that's what he's there for. But I do tend to agree with you, having him up on that line with Matt Barzal, when you could see Mac go cold for a little bit, he's back on the score sheet now. Trying to put him with people. I mean, at his heart, Matt Barzal is a setup guy. We've seen him score incredible goals. There's no question. I mean, between the legs against Buffalo a couple weeks ago, that's still etched in our memory, as it should be. But he is a setup guy. So when he's playing with people like Eberle, who's a finisher, great. Anders Lee, he's a finisher. Great. Leo Komarov's not a finisher. He's a grinder, and he does offer a lot to the lineup. So my question would be, why wouldn't he go down to like a third line and try Wahlstrom up with Barzal? And I know a lot of other, I'm not alone in thinking that, but on the flip side, just playing devil's advocate, I do also understand that when you have a line that's doing pretty well with Pageau, Beauvillier, and Wahlstrom, you want to make sure you keep something going. Now that they've come into, they had a really good March. They went 11-4-0, but this last couple of weeks, they just don't, even some of the games they won, I didn't think they looked very good against Boston. So, I would imagine that maybe Barry Trotz, sometimes he says he throws the lines in the blender. Maybe we see some of that coming up. Putting somebody like Leo and Pageau together, maybe that works. Maybe, and he's done it before. So maybe mix up that second line. So I would expect in the next couple of weeks, we see some lineup changes. We saw Bellows and Zarnik too, to throw in and mix some things up too.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
AJ says we're going to see some lines change. I agree. I don't think it's going to be internally either. We're now at T-minus 13 days until the trade deadline. And this little break that they're on right now, they're off today after the loss in Pittsburgh last night. They'll practice tomorrow, a very rare practice day. And then it starts a stretch of six straight at home against Washington, Philly, and the Rangers in various order. And I think this kind of feels like the right time to make a move. It takes two to tango always. Lou Lamoriello doesn't just decide he wants to make a trade and then boom, somebody else just kind of hands over whoever they're going to hand over. So you can't just say it and make it happen. But if you had an ideal situation to bring someone in, especially after seeing what we've talked about and what seems to be missing, I think for me, as the time, since March began, when we started talking about trade deadline stuff and pie in the sky and maybe this guy and maybe that guy, I think you can start to narrow it down to the types of guys that Lou Lamoriello feels like you could be brought in and not disrupt team chemistry, guys that maybe wouldn't cost a roster player so that you're subtracting someone from that good chemistry, someone good, obviously, too. So I don't think you're going to see a big blockbuster trade with 10 guys moving around or even two or three guys moving in and out. This is going to be targeted. This is going to be much like the JG Pageau at the last trade deadline. They're going to identify someone that they feel like fits. And I definitely think it's going to be someone that they feel like fits in the short term, because they are going to get Anders Lee back to the start next season, ideally. So for me, it's a couple of guys that kind of stand out right now. One is Nick Foligno, who I think I mentioned here a couple of weeks ago when we did our trade deadline, and Columbus was actually starting to pull it back together, and now they've completely fallen apart again, losing a couple to Detroit, and now they're headed into Tampa and Florida. You know, to me, he's a guy, he's a captain, he's a veteran, he's a guy who can score a little bit, and I think most importantly, he's a high character guy. He's known as a guy who fits into certain situations, is a very adaptable sort of player. We don't know if Columbus is willing to give him up. We don't know if Lou Lamoriello can convince Columbus to give him up, but he stands out to me as number one on the list of guys I'd like to get if I were the Islanders and fit into that Anders Lee-sized hole in the top six.
Yeah, you know what? I remember you mentioning Nick Foligno, and I think I really like him, the way he plays. He offers a lot of, you know, you comparing him to Anders Lee makes a lot of sense to me because of the size. Maybe not quite as big as Anders Lee, but he plays as big. He's gritty. He's willing to throw down. And like you said, he's just known. He's notorious for being that sort of team guy, do whatever it takes. And of course, he's, you know, been a leader for a long time. You know, it's always interesting with Columbus when you have Jarmo Kekalainen over there as the GM. They have a history of making big splashes at the deadline, for better or worse. So it will be interesting to see. It seems like it has turned into a bit of a train wreck over there. So I think that he will. Again, I know nothing about that side of it in terms of what these guys are working with. And I guess none of us do. And that's the fun of it, right? We get to banter back and forth and say what we would do. But he can score some goals. Maybe he's not quite as much of a goal scorer as Anders Lee, in my opinion. But in terms of what Lou Lamoriello is going to be willing to give up, I think that he certainly fits the bill. They do need somebody to play on that top line with Anders Lee that can, you know, get in front of the net and tip into, you know, that Anders Lee office right there. And I think Foligno would be good for that. So I agree with you. I think he would probably be at the top of my list without really knowing who the, you know, upcoming, having a list of upcoming people that would be available in my mind. But I think Foligno is a good one.
The other guy that's been bandied about, I think a lot of by, you know, writers, commentators, people who know the game but don't necessarily know what Lou Lamoriello is going to do, is Dustin Brown. And that to me it's a little bit more complicated, mostly because he's got a year left beyond this season at, I think, $5.87 million cap hit. And anything beyond league minimum cap hit for next season is going to be problematic for Lou Lamoriello, because we've gone over it a million times. They do have the Seattle expansion draft where maybe they'll have someone with a decent size cap hit that'll be selected, or they can work out a trade to make sure that the Seattle selects someone that has a decent-sized cap hit. But you need new contracts for Anthony Beauvillier, Adam Pellick, and Ilya Sorokin. And at the very least, those last two guys are indispensable for what the Islanders do, Sorokin and Adam Pellick. So there's big raises coming for all three guys. And that really complicates things if you're going to acquire a guy who's got a little bit of term left. Now, having said that, Lou Lamoriello is a creative GM. He knows what he's doing. He's been doing it a long time. And if this is the guy that he wants, he could probably figure out a way to make it happen without killing their 21-22 cap hit. Dustin Brown is an older guy. He's 36. He's having a great year. I believe he's got 14 goals for LA. I've heard from people around the Kings that they love having him there with all of their young guys, and they have a million really talented young guys coming up. So it's really a question of whether that this would even be a situation where he'd be willing to move. The Islanders would figure out how to work him, you know, how to work it in financially, what sort of return the LA would be looking for a guy who's been a captain, who's been a multiple Stanley Cup winner for them. You've seen Dustin Brown play, AJ, this season. Do you see a guy that also fits in that spot on and off the ice that the Islanders need?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he is a different, he doesn't have quite as much of the sort of physical grit as a Foligno in terms of filling in for Anders Lee. But I really like Dustin Brown. I like his energy. I like, you know, when we get to interview him again, I mentioned it's through Zoom, but he's evolved his game. That's what I think is so impressive. When you take somebody like him at age 36, he's changed the way that he plays, and he changed the way that he trained. And he talked about it. He said, I getting most of my chances from inside the circles in that, you know, area that Butch calls the dirty area. And he said, I'm getting there quicker in my shifts. So he's sort of smarter. He's not playing PK. You know, there's all these different things that he has worked on to stay relevant. And I think that says a lot about the kind of person he is and the kind of athlete and frankly, the kind of competitor he is. So the question, of course, is whether he would be, he's been in LA for so long, right? He's raising a family out there. Is this something at this point of his career? Does he want to get out because of, you know, there's a chance to be on a team that's heading to the playoffs in a really good position to make a deep run towards the cup? I think that he also plays that role. I think you and I have also talked, staying in Southern California, about Ryan Getzlaff for the same reason. If he wants to stay in Anaheim for the remainder of his career, I'm sure that he's earned the right to do that. If he also wants to head somewhere else to try to win late into the playoffs, then, you know, I think he's earned the right to do that as well. And I think both of those guys bring leadership, bring that locker room, that sort of intangible that we've talked about. And neither of them have to go through the quarantine of the border crossing up in Canada. I know they've reduced it, but still, I think that creates some issues with trades from up north.
It definitely does. And there's really not been any big moves that have been made so far. I mean, we saw Eric Staal go from Buffalo to Montreal for a couple of mid to late round picks, but, a lot of the big name players are still out there. And it seems like we're kind of in the situation where the teams that are out of it are starting to understand that they're out of it. So the Islanders are very much in it. And I think something that we didn't really discuss that much that I think factors into it, especially with a GM who knows his players well, like Lou does, and a coach who knows his players well, like Barry does. Sometimes you make a go for it trade. And I don't know if Foligno or Brown would really be considered that, but it would fill a big need because your players have earned it. And I think the reward for this team, Lou wants to win as bad as anybody. So does Barry. So do the guys in the room. But to just sort of say, well, you know, our captain's gone, our leading scorer is gone, and we're kind of struggling a little bit. Let's punt it to next year. And when he's back and we'll figure it all out then, that's not Lou's way for sure. But also it really, you know, it's a disservice, I think, to a group of players that the style that the Islanders play, grinding it out night after night, it's something that's deserving of a reward for as successful they've been so far this year.
Well, and I would also add to that success in this league is really, really hard to obtain. And it's really hard to sustain, to keep it going throughout a season. So no matter how good your lineup looks on paper, if you've figured something out like these guys have over the last, you know, obviously two seasons ago, they went second round of the playoffs and exceeded expectations when Barry Trotz took over. And then last year, even further, went to the Eastern Conference Final, falling to the eventual Stanley Cup winner. So, you know, now they're down Andersley. That's a huge loss. We can't underestimate what that does to the team on and off the ice. However, they're playing really well otherwise. I mean, notwithstanding the last week or so, and you and I have talked about that, in general, they have a lot of great pieces. Their goaltenders are playing great right now. They're both dialed in. I think they've got the personnel up and down the lineup with a couple holes. And to your point, to just say, okay, well, this is a wash. When, by the way, they're sitting second in the East and only 2 points back from Washington. Yes, they've got a tough road with a lot of games against the Caps coming up. But, you know, to me, I think that they have earned that. And it's amazing how things can change in this league too, though. I mean, the last time you and I talked about the trade deadline, either a week or two ago, we were talking about picking apart the Nashville Predators. Because they were terrible. And now suddenly here they are. They wake up yesterday morning. I did their game Sunday night. And they wake up in a playoff spot, right? So now, not saying that that's going to continue. And who knows? But you look at Chicago Blackhawks. They were supposed to be horrible this year. And look at how well they've done. So sometimes these guys, they catch lightning in a bottle. And so to your point, I agree. I think Lou Lamoriello understands that these players want to win. The staff wants to win. He wants to win. And of course, the fans want to see them win. And it would be such a disservice to what they've accomplished to suddenly become sellers or frankly, to not become buyers.
Yeah. Well, we've certainly been talking about the trade deadline a lot longer than anything's actually been happening. So maybe by this time next week, we'll have a new addition to the Islanders and we'll have something more to break down. But certainly a couple of tough games coming up at the Coliseum at the end of this week. AJ, as always, thank you so much.
Always fun. I look forward. I'll be there on site for the Thursday game. I hopefully they can turn it around. Get some good hockey going.
Yeah, and we thank Colin McDonald for stopping by and recapping his NHL and Islanders career. And thank you all for stopping in, as always. This is No Sleep Till Belmont, your Islanders podcast from The Athletic. If you could do us a favor, listening on your favorite platform, subscribe, leave a review. It always helps us figure out what to do with the show, and hope you keep enjoying it. Thanks again, everybody.